Good evening. Welcome to the Josephine County Board of Commissioners weekly business session. Today is May 11th, 2016. It's 5:30 p.m. If you please stand, we'll say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If the board would mind, I asked Trish Myers, our clerk, to come over this afternoon and just give us a little update on how the election is proceeding, ballots in, how they're counted, how they're processed, and that kind of thing. So is that okay with the board?
Yes. How about me?
Okay, Ms. Myers?
Hi, I'm Trisha Myers, the Josephine County Clerk. And we're at approximately 26% return on our ballots for this upcoming May election. And just for a little bit of a story of the life of a ballot, so, and the security involved in that, is each ballot that is mailed out to a voter has a unique identification, a barcode. And when that barcode is scanned, it pulls up the voter's registration information, and it shows that voter's signature. Therefore, when we receive these ballots back, we scan that barcode. It brings up the voter's record where we verify that the signature that we have on file matches the signature that's on that voter on that ballot. If the signature on the ballot does not match, it goes through two other individuals to look at that signature. And if all agree that it doesn't match, the voter gets a letter and has up to 14 days after the election to update their signature in order for their ballot to be accepted and counted. If a voter forgets to sign their ballot, then we send them notification, and they have up to 14 days after the election to come in and sign their ballot, and the ballot will be accepted and counted. As for security within the office, all of our ballots are within rooms that are double locked and sealed, and there are certain protocols as to that there has to be two individuals within the office in order to access those rooms. And so also we do have video cameras within the office that overlooks the areas of where our boards work. And the boards are made up of four ladies, and they're of differing political party affiliation. And what they do is, after signature verification, they get the batch of ballots. They verify that the number that was given to them from signature verification matches the number of ballots that they have, and that's usually a batch of no more than 300. And so they'll do their first count that they have those ballots. They have the amount that matches what was given to them from signature verification. And then they remove those secrecy envelopes from the pink envelope with the signature. And so those are kept separate, and then the ballot is removed from the secrecy envelope, thereby making it to where it's anonymous as to which ballot belongs to which envelope. And they just backbend those ballots and get them ready to run through our tabulator. And then those ballots are kept in a group, and we have a scanner that comes in, or I myself will scan, or the chief deputy. And we'll scan those ballots in, and the results are kept confidential, or they're not even actually able to be viewed until 8 o'clock on election night, and that's when the first results are given out, just a little after 8 o'clock on election night.
Mm-hmm. And you said how many are turned in so far?
About 26%.
26%. Okay. We want more people to turn their ballots in.
Is that average, or?
It is. It's along the lines of what it was 4 years ago for the primary.
Okay. Can a question is, are the ballots that have been put in a month ago, are they waiting to be counted, or have they already been pre-counted, or how is that handled?
So the way it works with election law, we 7 days prior to the election is when ballots are able to be removed from the outer envelope. And so that process did start yesterday. And the first day that ballots will be sent through the scanner will be tomorrow, and we'll everything that we have on hand, the majority of it, there might be 200 ballots that still need signature verification that was left over from today, but everything's prepared and ready to be ran through our tabulator tomorrow, and it's just those results won't be released until 8 o'clock on election night.
Exciting, your first one.
Yes.
Well, first one for being in charge. I don't think anyone has ever, I mean, Mr. Harvey, your predecessor, came and kind of explained how everything is kept under wraps and there's multiple people, but nobody's ever really explained all of the verification and the steps of the lifespan of a ballot. And that was really informative to me. I know that I've known people who have gone and been one of the watchers or people who can, observers, so to speak, and they've had nothing but really great things, complimentary things to say about the processes that go through an election in the clerk's office here in Josephine County. So that's an encouraging thing. Haven't heard anybody say anything of concern at all in the 5 years or 6 years that I've been around for this. So it's great.
Yeah.
Thank you for continuing that.
We appreciate having observers in the office. It's great to have somebody come in and be able to see the process from the inside and to feel confident in that process and to be able to relay that to others.
Absolutely. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Myers. We appreciate
Thank you.
It. Okay, we have two proclamations today. The first one, item 1A, in the matter of proclaiming the week of May 15th to the 21st, 2016, is National Police Week, and I believe we have Commissioner Heck that is going to read that.
I do. And I also mention a note was handed to me that this proclamation will also be read again on Tuesday, May 17th, at 10 a.m. in front of the courthouse during the regular ceremonies for the police officers' memorial. But I have the privilege, I want to read it now, and we'll hand it out on Tuesday. In the matter of proclaiming the week of May 15th to the 21st, 2016, as National Police Week, whereas Congress of the United States of America has designated the week of May 15th through the 21st as National Police Week, and whereas it is important that all citizens know and understand the duties, responsibilities, hazards, and sacrifices of their law enforcement agencies, and that members of our law enforcement agencies recognize their duty to serve the people by safeguarding life and property, by protecting them against violence and disorder, and by protecting the innocent against deception and the weak against oppression. And whereas we should all respect, honor, and remember those who have fallen, and whereas the men and women of the law enforcement agencies of Josephine County unceasingly provide a vital public service, now therefore be it resolved that the Josephine County Board of Commissioners hereby proclaims the week of May 15th to the 21st, 2016, as National Police Week in Josephine County, to join in commemorating law enforcement officers, past and present, who, by their faithful and loyal devotion to their responsibilities, have rendered a dedicated service to their communities, and in so doing, have established for themselves an enviable and enduring reputation for preserving the rights and security of all citizens. We call upon all citizens to honor those law enforcement officers who, through their courageous deeds, have made the ultimate sacrifice and service to their community or have become disabled in the performance of duty. And let us recognize and pay respect to the survivors of our fallen heroes. Done and dated this 11th day of May, 2016, signed by all three commissioners, Cheryl Walker, Chair, Keith Heck, Vice Chair, and Simon Hare, Commissioner. This, again, will be handed out on Tuesday at the ceremonies in front of the courthouse at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, May 17th.
Thank you, Commissioner Heck. The second one, item 1B, in the matter of proclaiming the month of September 2016 to be College Ready Month. And I'm going to read the proclamation, but I think we have a couple of people here that we invite up in just a moment. So, in the matter of proclaiming the month of September 2016 as Be College Ready Month, whereas a college degree or some form of post-secondary education or training is becoming the minimum credential required to get many entry-level jobs, and whereas the state of Oregon has a goal that by 2025, 40% of adult Oregonians will have bachelor's degrees or higher, and another 40% will have associate's degrees or other certificates, and whereas it is the state's best interest to help provide access to higher education for our children, and that encouraging parents to save for their children's education promotes that principle, And whereas outstanding student loan debt in the United States continues to rise and has reached levels that threaten the opportunities of many college graduates, and whereas in order to be college ready today, schools and families need to be prepared for the financial realities of achieving a higher education. And whereas the state of Oregon offers the Oregon College Savings Plan to help keep students out of debt by encouraging families to save rather than borrow for the majority of college expenses. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Josephine County Board of Commissioners does hereby proclaim the month of September 2016 as Be College Ready Month in Josephine County and calls upon citizens to join in this special observance. Done and dated this 11th day of May 2016, Josephine County Board of Commissioners, Cheryl Walker, Chair, Keith Heck, Vice Chair, and Simon Hare, Commissioner. And we have Susan Zatola and Dave Valenzuela. If you'd like to come forward, please.
I'd like to thank the board.
That person?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you for working on this project.
If you'd please say a few words about the Be College Ready program, would be wonderful.
We'd like to thank the board for the opportunity to proclaim this month as Be College Ready Month. Susan Zatola, Grants Pass School District, and myself, Three River School District, have worked really hard to provide opportunities for our not only our kindergarten students, but all of our students, but focusing on kindergarten now to make the idea of college a reality. One of the biggest roadblocks and barriers that our families face in Josephine County is the financial burden of going to college, and some of those things just seem out of reach. So the idea, along with partnership with the College Savings Plan through the state of Oregon, is to start that saving process now. They have incentives. I believe if you sign up as a kindergartner this year, they put $25 in an account for you, get that ball rolling. They've partnered with both school districts to be at our kindergarten launch and kindergarten roundup programs, provide information. They're providing us with school supplies, all kinds of stuff to put that message in front of parents and families that college is an attainable reality for every one of our students in Josephine County and in Grants Pass School District, and just encouraging that. So we appreciate this effort as well to continue that message.
Thank you. Great. Ms. Atola, you have anything else to add?
Well said. Just to add one
move over to the mic, please. Yeah.
Just to add one little piece to that, the reason we're starting with kindergarten is because we know that even having as little as $250 in an account but before students graduate from high school almost doubles their chance or probability that they will finish college. So it's not a huge amount of money that's needed to get kids just that idea of, well, I've got a little something that can get me started. So we're happy to, again, partner with Three Rivers and with the Oregon Savings Plan to get that going for our children.
Thank you.
I think the only question I had is, so this is September, designating September 2016, but this is obviously May.
Okay.
You want to maybe explain?
Just the kickoff to the school year and
okay,
starting
great.
And, you know, just that whole promotion of the fall and going back to school.
Okay, good.
It's my understanding that they're already conducting the registrations for kindergarten, the enrollment program, and that's the whole idea of having
okay.
this to put before the parents for registration.
Okay, great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to our administrative actions. Item 2A, approval of order number 2016-014 in the matter of authorization of sale of county real property by sheriff's sale. And I believe Commissioner Hare is going to address this.
Yes, actually legal counsel's office, and we have a representative from our property management office to make a presentation on this.
Oh, okay, great.
So, yeah, he's here tonight as the county expert.
Good afternoon.
On this process.
Well, we are coming close to a long process.
Please state your full name and your title.
Mike Watson, county property manager.
Thank you.
We have undergone a pretty extensive process that began about 3.5 months ago to take a look at all of the county-owned surplus properties. We began this process by enlisting the treasurer to provide us with a list of all properties that had been deeded to the county since 1998. That list was approximately 53 properties long, and those were properties that had not previously sold. We began looking at these properties in a number of different ways. First and foremost, if there were environmental concerns on that property that we knew were already existing, those were excluded. Remnants. A remnant is a small strip or a small block property that has very little value except perhaps to adjoining property owners. Those were removed at this point. We focused on the properties that had previously gone to auction and did not sell for whatever reason. So they're surplus. In addition to that, I went back on all of the older records indicating property sales that have taken place in the past and extracted another perhaps 17 properties out of that that were still in the list that were that predated 1998. So with that list, we went through, this was a large collaboration with many individuals and many working pieces, the treasurer, environmental health, planning took a look at the properties, the assessor's office took a look at, at the properties. We've had three individuals out at each one of these properties to evaluate and look to see that it is ready to be conveyed. And these are the cream of the crop, and there are 14 properties at this point in time. Two parcels are joined together, and they are identified as 16-02. They're both on Leland Road, and they are side-by-side parcels and are best sold as one. So they have been combined together, and that will become a single sale. So we have 14 properties, and we are getting very, very close to pulling the trigger on this. It's been a long process, and we're really excited about getting it moving. I have already begun working on additional lists of properties for hopefully a September sale, and at this point in time, I have approximately 50 products that I'm looking at. And within those properties are some of those remnants and slivers of land, and those often occur through recording errors or the meets and bounds, which is the descriptor of a particular property, could be off from a surveyor at some point way back in history. So that's where we are going. Are there questions?
I frankly think we could probably talk about this issue all night, how we get here. You know, the county goes through that process. It's a six-year process to foreclose on somebody who doesn't pay their taxes. It's not something that happens overnight. Most of these that I've been aware of in the time I've been here have been fairly abandoned. There's no next of kin. The assessor's office does an amazing job of trying to track down somebody before, because we really don't want them. That's the last thing we want is these properties to come into the county's maintenance portfolio, which is extensive. And so getting these back on the tax rolls in private sector's hands is really important. I think it's the goal that this board had laid out at the beginning of the year to do this process that really hasn't been done in close to 15 years, I think. It's been quite a while.
I believe the last sale was approximately 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay. Of this extent, there was only a few properties. There were three, if I remember. I think we did that when I first came on board. Maybe one of them sold out of the three. But we really want to divest ourselves of these potential liabilities. And the money has to be designated specifically for a particular department or its return to the tax entities on that property's tax bill. And Josephine County doesn't generate very much of any one tax bill, so it behooves us, and these properties have already been designated, so we don't have to do that. But that will be a process that's necessary in the next round of properties we look to liquidate through auction. And I just appreciate the entire team that worked on this. It's pretty extensive. There'll be a lot of work going forward in the next round, and looking forward to getting these off of our list of maintenance considerations and put them back on the tax roll.
What is the date for this? Do we have a date yet?
It's June 16th.
Thank you.
The auction will take place in this room, 10 o'clock will be the opportunity for individuals to begin signing in for the auction, and the auction will begin promptly at 11 o'clock. The auction is conducted by the sheriff's civil deputy. Something I failed to mention, too, I am pretty aggressively marketing these properties as best to my ability. I have drafted a number of letters that are going to all of the property owners that are adjacent or very close, nearby each one of these parcels, in order to notify them that the property in their neighborhood will soon be available at auction. Perhaps some of those individuals would be candidates for making a purchase of a property.
Are you posting it on the county website?
It is going to be on the county website. As soon as I have approval this evening, it'll be posted tomorrow morning. I've already begun building that website. Additionally, I have a cork board, attractive cork board product that I'm going to put in the lobby of the courthouse that will identify each one of the properties, and it'll have a little tear sheet so people can come along and take the information they need in order to do additional research.
Are you advertising it outside the area? Are we going to be doing that outside the area?
We're required to put it in a publication of local circulation 4 weeks successively leading up to the auction, but we have not discussed any wider advertisement than that. That's a good suggestion, that the more people, the better. But we can look into that for sure. I think that's...
And I do have a short contact list of developers or interested parties that I've been accumulating since being in this position, and those individuals I will be contacting directly with the list of properties for sale and the procedures for the sale.
I just think it might be a good idea to notify the Realtors Associations outside our area, in other counties, or even statewide. That might be a source of buyers. I only say that because I used to promote these auctions. And most of the buyers are not local. At least my experience was most of the buyers were not local. So,
very good. I'll certainly research that and do what I can in that. Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Good
Again,
job.
This is, to me, is very encouraging to see what you've accomplished since you were hired to do these very kinds of things. And to see them actually, and there's a lot of work behind the scenes to get these things able to be sold, and to see these things moving now to actually being sold is really, it's very appreciative of all of the work that you've done.
Well, thank you. Ideally, we'll see two of these sales per year for a while.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you.
The ball needs to get rolling first.
Exactly.
Now it's starting to get ready, almost ready to roll. So.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, item 2B, approval of grant of easement and agreement with Robert W. Stumbo and Donna M. Mitchell. Excuse me. I think that's supposed to be AKA Donna M. Stumbo. And we have several of these. Do you want me to read all of them at the same time, or do you want to address them individually?
Well, you can read them all together. They all kind of speak to the same concept of getting access to a timber sale. Or a proposed timber sale or an actual timber sale, and that's items 2B and C are actually together. One has a formal dollar amount associated with it. It's $9,000. That's the only permanent easement that we're...
That's the second one, isn't it?
I think that's one of two. Yes, I think that's the second
mm-hmm.
one. They get kind of confusing. This is a pretty routine aspect of our forestry program, being that we have... close to 200 different parcels in the most complex county system of ownership in all western counties in Josephine County. So you don't just take one road or go through one piece of property in order to get to our forest holdings. You could go through literally up to a half a dozen different property owners before you get to the parcel we're looking to manage. So these are all private sector rights of ways or easements. But we have, I think the number is close to 80 reciprocal rights-of-way agreements with the BLM alone to manage our other holdings. So go ahead, I guess.
Okay, I will read each of these by title here. on the agenda. I just read the item C. Item 2D, approval of grant of temporary easement and agreement with Brooke McCain and Willa McCain. Item 2E, approval of grant of temporary easement and agreement with Donald Holland and Dolores Holland. And then item 2F, approval of grant of reciprocal easement and agreement with Melba Carlson, a.k.a. Melba Holland. The last one is a timber sale contract. So I won't. You want to talk about those any further on the easement issue in regards to the
timber sale? I really don't have much else to say. No. I think those are... They're all to facilitate our forest management operations. That's pretty much...
Easements. Okay, item 2G, approval of a timber sale contract with Greg Lyles Logging, Rock Creek Hardwood, 2016-T-9. And you wish to comment on that?
Sure. This is a... it's under a logging operation, but it's just for firewood operations. It's a sale of, I believe... I'm trying to remember the number. It's a significant number of cords of wood. It's basically a restoration project after the Douglas complex of wood that wasn't merchantable at the time that was involved in that fire. And this is necessary in order to kind of reduce the woody mass on the slope, on the parcel, before reforestation takes place. And so there is a revenue stream associated with that. We are slowly phasing out of the firewood business, having made a number of these contracts over the years. And so this was an unanticipated. The anticipated sum of revenue is $14,314. And I'm looking for the number of...
Yeah, I've got a minimal conifer volume of 100 million board feet.
Yes, and 285 cords. So it's not the largest sale we've ever had. We did one a couple of years ago that was 300 cords, proposed cords. But most of this, if not all, is dead and dying timber that it really, frankly, needs to be managed. So that's
right.
That's it.
Thank you.
Its propensity to burn is, after a wildfire has been through there, is significantly higher. And it actually adds as a potential liability to reforestation actions that we've done in the area. Something I've learned through this process after a catastrophic wildfire is that I think it's three times. This propensity is three times higher to burn after a wildfire's gone through there because you've got, in our lightning season, these snags that stand up at the top of a ridge, and they're the... a very vulnerable place for lightning to strike and start a new fire. And then there's a lot of woody biomass, dry tinder that's developed as an unmanaged stand of trees after a wildfire. So really important to manage that and get those fuels reduced.
Okay. All right. We'll move on to the requests and comments from citizens. I'd like to remind you need to state your name and your address. You don't need to give a street number. You'll each have 3 minutes. I know it's just the week before the election here, but you're here to address the board. This is not a forum or debate of any kind, so please keep your comments to county business, if you would, please. And we'll start over here, and okay, you're all ready, Mr. Ertl.
Thank you, Bill Ertl Williams, Oregon. I'm going to speak with a different hat right now, and it's my Grants Pass Board of Realtors hat, and I'm wondering if there's some way we could coordinate with this gentleman on the sale of the property, and we have a website. We could put it out there and publicize it a little bit more. So I'd be happy to do that. I have some good news to announce, two positive things. Today. First, I got on the scales this morning and I've lost 50 pounds since last Father's Day. So that's a really big moment for me. And then I was at the Chamber Greeters meeting this morning and I won a bottle of champagne. So I'm on a big roll today.
You're going to celebrate.
This would be the crowning event, if I can coordinate with you. Thank you.
Great.
Okay. Anyone else over here? Sandy Casanelli?
Sandy Casanelli, Merlin, Oregon. I just have three little things. I guess we can, as candidates, talk about the election tonight because it's after the clerk's office has been closed, and I think they changed the law. So well, candidates, just, you know, speak away so we can hear your views. And the second item I'd like to talk about is the Exhibit A for Item 2A. It's a sale of county real property. If you look on page 7, there's a chart of the 14 tax lots. And it's kind of confusing because the headings are like black on black. You don't really know what it is. We can guess at the tax lot, maybe in the physical address, but the last two columns, you know, is it the assessed values or the true market value? And is the last one the minimum bids? It's just not a good idea to have bold, you know, black on black, so the public doesn't know what's going on. And the third item I'd like to talk about today is I asked at the budget session and at the weekly business session last week for the accounting of the SRS Title I payments. I would like to know how much money came in every year since 2012, since H.R. 3175, I think it is, was passed. Where, how much money came from the Title I SRS payments every year? How, where was that money put, and how much went to road reserves? So those are my questions, and I'd hopefully we can get an answer before the budget session, the last budget session, which is election night on Tuesday. Thank you.
Anyone else over here on this side? Yes. Jean Mount.
Jean Mount, Grants Pass. I would like to just make a few comments related to the logging. No expert at all in logging, but I do have contact with many people who are involved with logging. Not this, I've read what was available online in the papers, so this may be the 55 acres fuel reduction and making good sense, but it brings to mind, because I'm aware of and read the other logging that is done in the county, and I just heard over, you know, 200 properties the county owns. I'm not sure of the number of acres, but thinking of this need we have, I know, for short-term monies, $14,000, very small amount. Right now, I know the logging price is quite low fiscally. I question at first whether this makes good economic sense to be selling it at this time. But what is the logging plan for the county? I'm sure there must be and is one, but I'm thinking more long-term. We're looking at a pretty difficult fiscal crisis coming next year without, you know, a lot of additional revenues, and this seems like such a short-term plan, cutting here, cutting there, $15,000, $20,000. Sometimes I think bake sales might be better. And leaving the trees in the ground sometimes really has, with a lot of scientific data behind it, a lot of economic benefit. So perhaps it's more information. And then raising some of the questions that I think need to be raised related to revenues in our county. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, Mr. Ford.
Larry Ford, 136 Fair Road, Grants Pass. It's kind of amazing that the question that she just asked was one of the things, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, the, you know, we hear We have a small, really vocal group here that don't seem to like anything that anyone in the county does, especially the Board of County Commissioners. I've been coming to these meetings on a regular basis before any of you are on as commissioners. This board has moved more things forward in the last couple of years than I believe has happened in probably the last at least five or six different boards of county commissioners. Dimmick Tower's torn down, plans on redoing that. This sewer system out in Maryland's being moved forward to implement, upgrade that. The timber, I'm sit on the timber council, and you know we did get a an inventory of our holdings, how the type of wood we have, the amount, what's harvestable, what's not. And that hasn't been done for since probably at least, I'm going to guess, the late 60s, maybe the early 70s. So it's very far outdated. We didn't know how much we had. We didn't know how much we could cut on a sustainable basis. We've now got answers to that. County parks, we've moved forward, and we've got plans to upgrade Whitehorse Park. Just a lot of things that this board has done that the previous boards have just chosen to ignore. And I think that needs to be highlighted because, quite frankly, we get a few people up here that have nothing good to say about anything that happens in the county, and I don't believe that's true. So I've been really involved in listening and coming to these meetings, and I see this board has done more than I'm going to put out at least the last five or six boards. So thank you.
Okay. Anyone else on this side? Okay. Go this side. Dale Matthews.
Dale Matthews, Grants Pass. Good news in that on Tuesday night at 8:01, we're going to be joining Trish Meyer in the hallway from badcounty.com, Insight News, and we will cover the election results live. The last time that we did this, even though this board refuses to recognize this as any kind of media at all, the last time that we did this, we had over 1,000 views that first night. So this non-media outlet will be giving you the very first introduction. You're welcome to come and see for yourselves just what kind of percentage you were defeated by. When this regime is swept out of office, one of the things that we can look forward to is actually following the law. No, not the motto, "I know we're breaking the law and I don't care." No, this would be following the law, and it wouldn't be also, well, we've not been found guilty of anything, and you knew all along you had been found guilty of something. And no, not that. But also the boards that are appointed by this board, they have not been putting out the proper information according to state law. They have not been following the law, Mr. Legal Counsel, and they have not been posting their minutes. And they've not been sharing with people what they're supposed to do. I'm running for office to replace Keith Heck, of course. And given the chance, if there was another candidate who's a fiscal conservative and cares about the law, what I'd say to the secretary of each of those boards is, you're going to follow the law or you no longer be the secretary of that organization. And if they continue breaking the law on a weekly or monthly basis, as the commissioners have done in the past, then I would say to the president of that board or the chairman of that board, if you don't follow the law, then we're going to take you off of the register. And if that board cannot follow the law, we're going to just stop that board from operating altogether. We will not allow the breaking of law anymore by commissioners or by the boards that have been appointed by you. This is a really simple thing, and it's easy to follow the law. You simply tell people what you're going to do. You give them the information, not black-on-black documents, that you've been warned about so many times, you just don't care because you just keep doing it anyway. So it would be transparency, really transparency, and following the law. That's what I'm running on, and we'll see if that's what people want. Look forward to seeing if what happened to a previous commissioner, Don Reedy by name, who was turned out of office with the greatest result in the history of Josephine County. We'll see if that's going to happen next.
Anyone else? Yes, ma'am, in the back. Okay, it's fine. Go ahead.
Tony Mitten, Wolf Creek, Oregon. I was at the last board meeting last Wednesday, and I noticed one thing about one of the county commissioners. He can't tell the truth. I sat here, listened to Mr. Matthews, then I listened to Mr. Heck that says that he lately announced what military organization he was with. Didn't happen, on tape. Then I heard, I seen Mr. Hexa.
Are you speaking to the board,
no.
sir?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
Seen Mr. Hexa advertisement in the paper, which stated that he tries to honor God in everything he says and does. Well, I'll tell you, sir, right now, God doesn't appreciate liars. Thank you.
Your turn. Yes, ma'am.
Catherine Austin, Cave Junction. A few months ago, I was here and I asked about House Bill 3453. In response, Cheryl Walker, you told me that the bill was draconian. Those were your words that you sat there and said. A couple of weeks later, you carried forth with putting forth a letter to the governor for intervention, which was about essentially that bill provided for. You have all declared, along with the Lipsick Committee and others, that we have a fiscal emergency, that the levy supporters sat here in this room, you packed with your crony friends, the SOS and CUFF supporters, and we listened to them tell their horror stories about crime in our county, the deplorable conditions of police not responding, the sheriff not responding, the 911 call that made national news in our county. And how you were just horrified by all of this. This was your response. And yet in the last couple of weeks over the budget committee meetings, Margaret Goodwin tried again and again to put money through to the sheriff's department. No way, no how would you guys even consider providing $1 for the sheriff, not $1 in any way, shape, or form to be available for him. We had $1.5 million of unexpected windfall money. We've had another $675,000, of which $77,000 was spent in 1 month for unnecessary water testing. You know the contract that Joseph Rice was pushing forth. You know what I'm talking about. And where did all that money go? Nope, not ready for the sheriff. You want to let the state come in here and force us to have higher taxes. That is the only resolve that you want, higher taxes. You don't want to see any other money in the meantime go to the sheriff. Even the sheriff, he's not wanting to even have more money. Isn't that ridiculous? If we really have an emergency, all those people that sat here in this room telling those horror stories, do we have an emergency or not? It doesn't seem nowadays like we do, but we want the governor to come and intervene anyways because we can't manage ourselves in our county. You all three have been, the board has been found guilty of ethic violations by the state. I think that speaks to your character. There's duplicity, deception, deceitfulness going on and on. Yes, Mr. Heck, I know we're breaking the law, and we don't care. And by the way, the higher courts of this nation have ruled that the police and sheriff are not liable to respond. But ultimately, I think the three of you should be held liable to those who came and told their horror stories. And to people who have crime in the meantime and are not able to get to the police and the sheriff to respond in a timely way. I think you should be held liable. Thank you.
Who else on this side? No? Okay. Bring it back to the board.
I'm just going to address, Ms. Mount's comments. I don't want to steal Mr. Streeter's thunder, but I'm looking at his presentation that he has prepared to address the budget committee on next Tuesday, and he'll be presenting on the fiscal outlook of our forestry program, He's a new forester. He took Vic Harris's position. I'm happy to discuss it with you, but offline. But we've been managing on a pretty regular basis for probably the last 20 or 30 years on a sustained yield management scheme. We did just review an inventory. So we reviewed 10% of our holdings, roughly 3,000 acres. So we have about 30,000 acres that we manage on several tracks around the county. And we just finished with timber sales, I believe April 15th. Or thereabouts, totaling 6.3 million board feet and an expected revenue. These are three-year contracts of $1.8 million. So this would be, this is the smallest sale of any one of our sales that we did. And that's, yeah, it's really a salvage element. So no, there's no opportunity for back and forth. I'm just making comments right now. You and I can speak offline if you want, Ms. Mount. No, Ms. Mount, I'm not, this is not an option. It's not open for back and forth, and I don't want to repeat myself on that. This conversation can happen afterwards if I didn't provide you the specific information you're looking for. Mr. Ford, I think you're absolutely right that this board has done a lot of good things, and those are often overlooked, and that's unfortunate because I think people who want to focus on the negative elements or the doom and gloom, I've struggled with that since I've been in office, the fact that there are is no other county in the state that's managing on a percentage of tax revenue generated as low as ours. And I think rather than being chastised or vilified, that we've existed this long on this level of funding should actually be a positive thing. I don't know how long it's going to continue. I think it's a debate as to whether or not, you know, what the future holds, and not very many people know it, and certainly myself included, but it won't continue. The short version is that we are spending more than we bring in our general fund allocations. We are, our reserves are dwindling to the lowest levels we've ever had, and in order to maintain the current level of service, it can't continue. It won't continue without another source of revenue that substitutes for secure rural schools or an extension or shared receipts of the past from timber harvests, things will change, guaranteed. They cannot stay the same. So what they will look like, I'm not sure yet, but I don't think that should discount the positive things that we have made strides in. One of the things that came to mind the other day when I was addressing the issue of the White Schoolhouse Road is somebody said, well, how can you focus on that when you're looking at needing to potentially close your jail next year or the following year? I said, just because I've got that is an issue that pretty much dominates, you know, my thought process and moving forward, and what I doesn't mean that I can't allocate a little bit of time to fixing what could be a potential, or what has been, you know, a delay in emergency responses to some 60 homes or 60 residences out there. We can do both. And we will continue to do everything we can to make Josephine County as prosperous and take care of the health, safety, and welfare elements that I think we've been entrusted with. So that will continue. We've got a whole lot of, I mean, if you look at our goals list from this last year, we don't have enough time this year to get all those things done. And I think that's good. You should never finish your bucket list. You should never finish with your goals. But we're making good progress. This property one is an example of that. The forestry inventory and the strategy that we're going to put forward in the future, that's another. There's a whole list of things that we're going to be doing this next year. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. Those are the comments I had.
The only thing I had, Mr. Mena, I'm not quite clear on what you're referring to. I joined the United States Marine Corps on July 15th of 1959, and I served until July 15th of 1963. I was honorably discharged with a DD-214. Civil Air Patrol doesn't get those things. I did get that. I had 6 years total, 4 years active, 2 years inactive reserve. So I'm not quite sure if there's some question on my serving in the Marine Corps or whatever. I mean, it's there. It's proven. I can give you my serial number, which is a scary thought. It's only 50 years ago, and I still know the thing. But anyway, so if there's anybody has any questions on my military service, I'd be glad to sit down and talk with you.
Okay. The fact that you can still remember your serial number.
Yeah.
My dad still remembers his own father's serial number from World War I.
Man.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Some people have a way with numbers.
No,
okay.
It's just that you say it enough times under certain threatening conditions, you will not forget it. 1-878-019. That's what.
Good job. Okay. All right. I'm going to refrain from any comments till the end. So, okay. I will entertain a motion on item 2A.
Madam Chair, I'd move for approval of item 2A, which is order number 2016-014 in the matter of authorization of sale of county real property by sheriff sale.
And I'll second that motion.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No.
Just again, thrilled to death to see that it is actually taking place, that the barge is beginning to move. And that's a tremendously encouraging thought.
I would just like to say, too, when it comes to selling county-owned property, it's, some people like to think that you can just go out and stick a sign on it and you're going to sell it, but it's a very complex and involved process because there are so many rules that you have to go by, and each property is different. You can't just say, we're going to sell 20 properties and put them all out there. They all have to be evaluated on their own merit for determination. So I appreciate all the work that's gone forward on this. This is something that we have talked about. I don't know about previous boards, but since Commissioner Heck and I came on the board, this is something we've talked about for a long time, but we knew we needed someone who could devote full time to it, as our property manager has, and I really appreciate that, so thank you. Okay, motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Item 2B. I need a motion, please.
Madam Chair, I'm going to deviate from past practice. The reason things are on the administrative calendar for the public's information is that they're either a change in policy or they're a change in budgetary elements. All of the next five items are easements of one measure or another, which is kind of a change in a policy as far as our liabilities and access and all of those things. But they're all under the same general auspice. So if the board would indulge me, I'd like to make a motion that approves items 2B through F. And I'll read them. I have no problem doing that. But I won't read them if the board is not inclined to move them forward as a block.
I don't mind.
Oh, that's fine.
I have no
objection.
So my motion is for items 2B, C, D, E, and F, which is approval of grant easement in agreement with Robert W. Stumbo and Donna M. Mitchell, a.k.a. Donna M. Stumbo. Approval of grant item 2C is approval of grant of temporary easement in agreement with Robert W. Stumbo and Donna M. Mitchell, a.k.a. Donna M. Stumbo. Item 2D is approval of grant of temporary easement of agreement with Brooke McCain and Willow McCain. Item 2E is approval of grant of temporary easement and agreement with Donald Holland and Dolores Holland. And item 2F is approval of grant reciprocal easement and agreement with Melba Carlson, a.k.a. Melba Holland.
And I will happily second that.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further comment on any of those?
No.
Again, just glad to see that these things are moving and progress is being made, and some of the stuff has taken a long time, and a lot of little fingers have to be tied together and move in the same direction, and that's being done, and that's really good.
You're glad you don't even know. The item B and C has taken over a year.
Mm.
So,
okay.
One time.
Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries. Item 2G, approval of a timber sale contract with Greg Lyles Logging, Rock Creek Hardwood, 2016 T-9.
Sure, read that one. I'll make a motion to approve 2G.
And I'll second that.
Previously read.
Any further discussion?
No.
I don't know if it was mentioned that the revenue to the county is expected to be about $14,314. I'm not sure if you mentioned that or not, but just so that everybody has an idea, we're not talking about a $4.6 million sale or something.
Firewood? Are you kidding? Okay, I have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Okay, our consent calendar for item 4A, our minutes, a weekly business session of April 20th, 2016, executive session, which was the open session, April 27th, 2016, county administration workshop, April 28th, 2016, and county general discussion on April 28th, 2016. And item 4B, BLM right-of-way permit and road use agreement, M-1538, amendment number 7. Commissioner Hare.
Yes, this is another forestry focused right-of-way agreement, and it's an amendment to an existing agreement, and there's no fiscal exchange on this. And as an amendment, it is not an administrative item.
Okay. All right.
And I'll second the motion.
Also move to approve the consent calendar items 4A and B. It was your turn to make motion, but whatever.
No, but because you hung with me in there and you moved, I will second that.
Did.
So we have a motion and a second twice over. Hey. We have a roll call, please.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, motion carries. Okay, do we have any other business that needs to be taken care of by the board today?
No.
Okay, no. All right, any other matters from commissioners?
I would like to mention some. There's an annual Rogue River cleanup hosted by our Parks Department. Josephine County Parks provides 80% of the public access to the Rogue River within the Josephine County area. And this is a huge event, takes all day. There's actually even refreshments and I think a band at the end. I want to encourage people, you can sign up early, but you can come to Hog Creek Boat Ramp at 8:30 on May 14th. This year, coming up this Saturday, and there's a barbecue, live band, and prize drawings finalized at 2 p.m. at Indian Mary Park. So I believe they start upstream, work their way down to Indian Mary. It says, come clean up the shoreline of Rogue River and along the road, help remove noxious weeds, and enjoy live music at the barbecue. You can pre-register at www.solve.org. If you need additional information, I believe you can call the Parks Office at 474-5285. It's amazing the things that happen as a result of this. The 300 volunteers last year collected a 10-yard dumpster and took to the landfill full of garbage, 4.5 yards of metal, glass, and plastics for recycling, and a additional 2 truckloads of tires. I believe the number was approaching 200 tires that they either got out of the stream side or the roadside. And not a small issue. Frankly, it should probably be more than just once a year. It's pretty terrible that there's that much stuff that's, and I'm sure they don't get everything, but they try really hard. It just is an improvement for the whole recreating season along the Rogue River, but something similar should be organized for the Illinois River as well, out in the Illinois Valley, or maybe the Applegate, too. Something I didn't mention, so I encourage you to come out and volunteer. It can contribute towards your 8 hours of volunteering to get a free annual park pass if you're interested in that. So a family of four can come out and volunteer for 2 hours, and they can get their 8 hours done by all the members and get an annual pass. There was some notes that I wanted to make in reference to forest management that I may have already touched on, but I didn't reference my notes. In 2012, you guys were on the board? Or I can't remember.
13.
You started 13. So this was in November of 2012 election. This board has asked a number of non-binding questions on the ballots, and it's hard to remember what board did that. I've done 6, I think, since I've been on. But just prior, there was a general election question that asked whether or not forest management is an appropriate revenue stream to fund county services. I think that's pretty much how it was worded. The results of that election was that 71.5% of Josephine County's electorate that was questioned, roughly 25,000 people, said yes, that is an appropriate management tool and revenue stream for county services. One of the things that is inspired me to be a champion of forest management above probably all other natural resources, second only to perhaps agriculture, is that it's a renewable resource It improves carbon sequestration. So if we were to leave the dead and dying timber in the forest, there's a tremendous amount of natural but carbon that's released out into the atmosphere. And people who are interested in carbon sequestration know that putting it in the form of buildings and actually having it processed and utilized locally reduces the carbon footprint. Rather than buying wood from China, Russia, importing it from someplace else, we are the number one producer of softwood products in the nation, Oregon is, as well as plywood. And that's a huge building material that's not just used here in the state of Oregon or the West, but also worldwide. And so it's a local building material. There's no other sector of our economy in Oregon that's been studied more than the wood products industry. The numbers that I have from that are that for every dollar that's generated from the natural resource or processing of timber is reverberated throughout the community six times. And that's well accepted and a number that's been utilized a number of times. I served for a year or more on the governor's task force on ONC lands, and we spent 19 days almost all day working on this forest management issue with people of all different sectors, and pretty important that we recognize how valuable this industry is, not even from an economic, but even from a forest sustainability and health. I don't believe that those issues are mutually exclusive. You can have both recreation, as the BLM's resource management plan just recently determined that the recreational values are not negatively impacted by forest management. And I think that's a pretty important distinction. A lot of people want to say, you know, you leave a tree has a greater value from a recreation standpoint than one that's cut down. There's a lot of statistics that say that you can do both on the landscape in Oregon. They don't have to be mutually exclusive. And there's actual positives to having this variety of management schemes on the landscape. So I could talk for days on this, but that's all I wanted to say. I think there was some comments referenced on forest management issues, and it's kind of been something that I've taken under my wing and have been a champion for as long as I've been on this board, and I will continue to do so. I think it makes a lot of sense. Those are the things I
just want to mention, that we have two newspapers in the county. The Daily Courier 5 days a week basically publishes, and then the Illinois Valley News publishes. And each newspaper will have editorial opinions, that kind of a thing. And I would encourage you, if you have not seen the editorial opinion that was in this day, today's Wednesday, May 11th, of the Illinois Valley News, I'd encourage you to get it and to get a full picture, better picture, from their perspective anyway, of some of the individuals involved in the county. So I'll leave it at that. So,
nothing else?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. We I think that since we're all three on the budget committee, I'm not going to comment on some of Ms. Austin's comments that in regards to reasons behind anything that the committee is considering. I will say this, though. We have had some individuals complaining about notice in regards to budget and the availability to review the budget, as if the county is withholding information. That budget has been available. It's been posted online since the very first budget meeting, which has now been, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks?
Over a month.
It's been about a month. And we haven't even had our first hearing. We've had budget presentations, but we haven't yet had the official public hearing, which is coming up on the 17th. Is that correct? Okay. So that will be almost a full 5 weeks that that budget is available for people to come in and make comment or contact anyone in regards to clarification. Our budget officer, Arthur O'Hare. I've known Art Harvey a long time. But Arthur O'Hare, who is our budget officer, if you have any questions on that proposed budget for which the actual official public hearing is going to be next Tuesday, You've had already an entire month to do that. So I encourage anyone that has any questions on that to contact him for any clarification in regards to any of those figures in that budget or how it's prepared or who prepares it or how it's handled. He will have those answers for you, and if you ask a question he's never been asked before, he'll get you an answer. So I encourage you to do that, and again, that will be next Tuesday for that budget hearing. Okay, I just want to add, we're in the month of May, and it's going to be Memorial Day coming up, and I just returned from a trip to the Netherlands. A country that was obviously very much affected by the Second World War. And I don't think people in the United States realize what the people of Europe or how the people of Europe view the United States and Canada and Britain. I got on a bus, and the tour guide is a gentleman who was 7 or 8 years old, when the Nazis were in his country, in the Netherlands, and when the British and Canadian forces landed to try to liberate them, particularly at the battles there in the Netherlands. And you've heard of the Bridge Too Far. That's where he lived. He lived only about 2 miles from that bridge. And they sheltered soldiers in their basement, hid them from the Nazis. And when he got on that bus, he turned around, he says, well, where's everyone from? You know, and, well, United States and Britain and Canada. That's the people who are on the bus. And he says, all our liberators are here. Mm. And that was quite an impressive thing to me, that they still, after all of these years, think of us as their liberators. So the history was very revealing, and their regard for their liberators is still very, very high. So I was very impressed. Okay. So any further business or comments?
Your comments on the Budget Committee were right. But it's important to remember that the Budget Committee is just making a recommendation on the proposed budget to the Board of Commissioners. Our formal hearings will probably be somewhere at the end of May or beginning of June. And so that just elongates the process, which the public will have an opportunity to engage with again. So it's a very extensive process for our budget hearings set up by state law. So.
Thank you. Okay. Being no further business, the meeting is adjourned at 6:37 p.m.